Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Studios for June 29th, 2019. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to preview the Wimbledon Championships. Before we begin this week's show, let's introduce our co-host. Parsa, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing very well, very excited. We've got some technology going on so we can address the issues. Yes. And with our audio on top of it, we've got probably the greatest tournament all year, Wimbledon, coming up on Monday. Just a ton of excitement, a ton of energy going on, and tennis is back in full swing after, I thought, another historic Roland Garros, Nima.
It really was. I mean, we haven't spoken to everybody since our preview for RG, and we had Barty Party winning her maiden.
That's right.
We had the Barty Party winning her maiden Grand Slam, which is really nice to see. Probably one of the best athletes on the women's tour taking her first Grand Slam. And then we had, I mean, Rafa Nadal, Parsa, 12 Roland Garros titles, which is just unfathomable. I don't know. You know, you always tell me, you know, records are meant to be broken, right? But who's going to break this record, though? I mean, this is 12. You know what? Because you got to look at it like this, right? For somebody to win 12 Frenches, you got to start when you're 17, 18. Because you're not going to start at 25 and then finish winning Roland Garros at 38. Because you're not going to win. He doesn't even win every year. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, how do you make that all transpire? It's just, you know, stuff that legends are made of at the end of the day. So, you know, congrats to Rafa. Very interesting for me, the dynamic now going into Wimby, which we have Djokovic and Nadal not playing any lead-up events. So this is not very typical for them anyways. In the last few years, they've been kind of dodging the warm-up events. But, you know, that they've both opted for this route this year. And we're going to see how it goes. You think that's a good move by both those guys?
I think it's optimal for them to stay fresh. I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. Okay. They have to be prepared. They both had, obviously, their deeper runs at Roland Garros. And this is about a season. These guys are seasoned professionals. They can go back and forth. And they are very successful throughout a calendar year. And they need to have that rest, optimal rest. And, you know, the grass is sort of plays different than everything else. So they look at it as a sacrifice almost, that they know that they can get going through the first couple rounds and they'll gain their footing. And when they get to the later stages, they'll be playing their best tennis. And they feel like they don't need those extra tournaments in order to do that. On the other hand, you take a guy like Federer, I feel like, who he plays, and I think he does it partially because it pads his points too. I mean, he's probably the best grass court player. If the whole year was on grass, I don't know, would he still be number one in the world, Nima? What do you think?
I think that if Joker, you're saying that if grass was the full year, it was grass, like it was back in Rod Laver's era when three of the four majors were on
exactly
grass, would Djokovic be number one in the
yep
world? I think he would definitely be top three because he's an exceptional athlete, mover, defender. And but, I mean, Federer would probably have easy 15 Wimbledons. Be something crazy like that.
It would be totally insane. But yeah, anyway, that's a fantasy thought here. That's not reality. Reality is,
yes,
is that we've got Monday coming up.
Yeah.
We've got a tournament that, you want to go through these draws, Nima? Before I say or put any input on it,
yes,
you want to go through these things?
Yeah. So basically what we're going to do is we're going to break down the women's draw, give our picks, break down the men's drop, give our picks, and then we're going to shift gears to basically almost next month, even though we're still in June, but end of August when NYC kicks off with the U.S. Open and this new coaching rule that they have, Parsa, where the coaches from the stands now can coach, which is, I think you don't like it, I really like it, so it's going to be interesting. Anyway, so let's jump into the Barty party here. First quarter of the women's draw, I mean, I'm just going to say it. I don't think I've ever seen as loaded of a quarter ever. I mean, Parsa, I'm just going to read. This is the only one I'm going to read it off everything for. We got Barty as a top seed. We have Kuznetsova, who's won a couple slams. I know she's obviously a little bit past her prime. We've got Muguruza, two-time Grand Slam champion. We have Donna Vecic, who's been playing good, and she's a good grass courter. We have Pavlyuchenkova, who's, you know, definitely a good player. Bencic, who's played some great ball. Serena Williams, best player of all time. We have Kristina Pliskova, who's a good grass courter. You had Georges, who's been playing some good ball. Suarez Navarro, who's a great athlete. Sam Stosur, former Grand Slam champion. Maria Sharapova, five-time former Grand Slam winner. Pretty much on her back right now, but she's back in action for now. And then finally, you have Angie Kerber, who I believe has won this tournament twice. So, I mean, and that's just...
bad, huh?
And this is just this quarter. So, what's going to happen here? If you ask me, I'm still going with Barty Party to make the semis. I think she's feeling good. She just wanna. She's number one in the world now, Parsa, which this is amazing for me on the women's side, eh? I super appreciate the parity, the competitiveness aspect, but there's really no longevity and sustainability in the next crop of women players that are coming up. It's such a shift, right? We've had Pliskova as number one. We've had Osaka. We've had Halep. We've had Barty. And you look at the men's side, and it's been, you know, Joker, Nadal, Fed have just been doing this carousel now for the whatever it is now, 10 years. And it's like, but on the women's side,
for the last of life, yeah,
lifetime almost, yeah. Right? And but on I the mean, women's side, you
know, yeah, there's been room, Nima. You know, that's the thing. So the women, there's been. Just someone has been it's been necessary for someone to step up. And right now at this moment, because if you asked us two Grand Slams ago, it was, we thought it was the Osaka party, and now it's sort of turning into the Barty party.
Yes.
And
which sounds,
you know,
better.
Which sounds better, but how about that we get both those two, you know, raising their levels and competing against each other. And, you know, let's see who can raise to the next level, which is what the men's game did. Really, it was the big four or whatever it was. And they raised their levels against each other so much so that they ended up raising the level completely between all the different kinds of people. And so that's what ultimately, you know, tennis is about. Is about, okay, you could do one, I can do one better. You do a two, I'll do two better. You know, and it just keeps going up and up the ladder. And we see who's the best. Let's see if that can happen on the women's side.
So I think for me, Parsa, when I look at this draw, as I said, we got Barty as the number one seed. You got Kerber, Serena, Muguruza, Bencic, Vekic as the, you know, potential adversities that she'll have to deal with in terms of players. I'm going to still stick with Barty as my pick there. I'm just going to go through everything quickly here. I got Kvitova getting through as well, too. In the top half in the second quarter with Anisimova. Really like what I'm seeing from her still as my second player to watch out for. She's a 25th ranked player in the world now, which is incredible for her. On the bottom half, I'm going to go with Pliskova and Osaka making the semis. I got Barty making the finals. I got Kvitova taking out Barty. I have Pliskova taking out Osaka. And then I actually have Pliskova winning this title out of nowhere. Not really out of nowhere. She's been playing some good ball. But I think, you know, she's going to have what it takes to do some damage here. She's got the serve, definitely. Movement, not the best, but it's good enough on this surface. How about yourself?
I mean, so I've got a little bit of a shocker here, Nima.
Yes.
And in these situations, I always, you know, love to pick the one who everyone is sleeping on, and that is Miss Serena Williams. I think that she's going to come through this section because she's the star power, and honestly, there's one very significant thing. If her serve is on, she's still the best server in the world, and on this surface, I think it makes all the difference. And I think that she's going to be on, ready to go with minimal pressure. If she loses third round, no one's going to blink. So I think that's always a dangerous, dangerous position for any opponent of hers. For her to have no pressure to be able to go into those moments like that, I think is going to be very, very significant. So I've got a Serena Williams coming through that incredible section there. I've got Kvitova also in the second half. In my third, I've got Pliskova. You know, that's sort of, you know, par for the course. I think you have to. And I think I'm going to have Osaka as well. And I'm going to have Osaka upending Pliskova in the semi. And we're going to have a Serena Williams Osaka final. And I'm going to go with Miss Serena Williams to finally break the record and be for sure the greatest of all time. Continuing to catch. Is it Margaret Court, Nima? I believe so.
Okay. I mean, Parsa, I think for me, what I'm looking at here is, well, first of all, I don't know for anybody out there who's been following, but Serena's going to be wearing this really cool dress where the swoosh has, I think, 24 or 34 Swarovski crystals in her outfit. So that right there is going to be very interesting for, you know, for everybody to witness. I think, I mean, they always add a little bit of pizzazz to her outfits for SW19. And then going forward, I mean, look, Serena's a good pick. I just feel that she's been a little bit off lately, even though she really wants to be where she wants to be. So I think that's where, you know, you got to go with the informed players who are obviously a little bit younger and who have been informed and who have been winning majors. So that's why, you know, I'm going with what I'm going with. You have any other points to add as we wrap up the women's side?
I mean, it's going to be, again, I think that first section is going to be amazing. The rest of the tournament, I think, will play through the way it's supposed to play through. And I think we're going to start, if anything, we're just going to start getting some continuity, if anything, Nima.
Okay. All right, Parson. Now, as we move on to the men's side, it's obviously led by Novak Djokovic, who is, remember, Parson, a year ago, Joker comes into this tournament, desolate from his exploits at Wimbledon, pardon me, at the French, where he lost to Cecchinato, and he was just like, I don't even want to play on the grass. Marin Vlada is like, no, you're going to play on the grass, kind of like Brad Gilbert told Agassi back in 99, where you just got to play this tournament, you're going to win it. And lo and behold, he plays a tournament, he beats Nadal in that epic, and then he gets Kevin Anderson in the finals, and then wins that in straights, and, you know, third time Wimbledon champion. So, Joker is back in action, and I would say relatively favorable draw. I mean, if you look at his quarter, Parsa, for me, the two guys that he really has to worry about, I think he gets through Cole Schreiber, even though he's lost to him once earlier this year, I believe in Monaco or whatever it was, but I don't think that's going to be an issue here, even though Cole Schreiber is a former quarterfinalist here. I don't think he's going to have what it takes to get through him, but I really like what I'm seeing from Felix Auger-Aliassime, young Canadian from Montreal, just playing off the charts. He plays compatriot Vasek Pospisil, who's actually back from injury in round one. FAA coming in as the 19th seed, Parsa. And then you got another guy I think Joker's got to worry about, which is Stefanos Tsitsipas, who I think really gets it. He's a little bit of a weird guy. You know, he's got his own artistic side, and, you know, he does his own thing. He's against the grain. He's not one of these normal, you know, youngsters that you see nowadays. He's a little bit deeper, I think, and he's always talking about the meaning of life, and he's got a different type of maturity to him than you're seeing with some of the other guys, but around his age category. But I think, for me, Joker gets through this section, but I wouldn't be surprised if Felix can beat him, because we actually had an article out recently, Parsa, where we said that Felix is going to get a top three win by the end of 19, and I really believe that that's going to be the case. I think he's ready. He's just
and you
ready.
Know I you know I've been a big fan of his.
Yeah,
I mean
I just playing
I'm
amazing, and
yeah,
he's
got all the right tools, and he's young and he's motivated, and It doesn't even go to his head. He's much more than what he's doing right now. He expects more from himself, so that's always a good sign.
Yeah, and I mean, he's getting, like, you know, in Queens, look at it. He beats Dimitrov and Kyrgios, two very good grass courters, irrespective of form, irrespective of attitude. I don't care what it is. These guys are still world-class players. He's beating them in the same day. You know, he took care of Dimitrov very easily, and then he beat Kyrgios in a tough three-setter. And you know Kyrgios was up for that match, too. I don't care what he says or whatever the case may be. He was ready to go. So, I mean, you know, kudos to Felix. And I think Steph is another guy. He's actually alluded to the fact that, you know what, we have to step up. If we want to knock off these top three guys, the legends of the game, you know, we got to make some noise. So, let's see how that transpires. But I'm going with Joker to get through first section. I'm going to break everything down for you quickly, Parsa. Section sure. Number two, I have Kevin Anderson, who has been elevated to the fourth seed. I don't think he lives up to that seeding, even though he made the finals last year. He's coming back from injury. I don't think he's going to have enough in the tank right now in terms of experience and confidence to replicate that run of 2018. I think he goes down relatively early. I like Raonic because I think this is a very wide open section. If you look at Stan, for me, still looking to finish off his Grand Slam collection because he has one of every other one. So let's watch out for Stan here. But, I mean, grass is definitely not even close to his best surface, and that's shown throughout his career. You got Raonic, as I said. You got Khachanov, who's pretty good on grass, but not very, very good. Bautista Agut, again, not the best. Benoit Paire, Zarev, not in great form. So, I mean, how can you not go for Raonic, who's made the semis here before, who's made the finals here, losing to Andy Murray a few years ago? I'd like to see Opelka do well, but I think he kind of falls into the Isner mold on this surface where he's way too tall to get down to low balls, and that's going to maybe hinder him on this surface. So for that reason, I'm going with Raonic to get through. And then as I move down a little bit more, we got Rafa Nadal back in action. Very big landmine for him in the second round. We have the mercurial Nick Kyrgios, who says, I don't care, I don't want to be here. But we really don't know what's going on in his head. Really, really don't know. And you know what? He's got, I mean, that second round match, if it takes place, I hope it does, because Jordan Thompson's been playing some good ball on the grass, who is, you know, Kyrgios' fellow countryman from Australia. I fully expect Nadal to get through his first round match. And if that's a second round match, I mean, it's going to be tough. You still have to kind of favor Rafa, but, I mean, like, Kyrgios can definitely win that one. But I still go with Nadal just based on form. And then we got lo and behold, Roger Federer, almost 38 years old, just took his 102nd career title in Halle, playing unbelievable tennis. And he's got about, Parsa, as cupcake of a draw that he could have hoped for. And I will say this with confidence, that the only guy he's got to worry about in this quarter, Parsa, okay, is Matteo Berrettini, who's been playing amazing tennis. I mean, Italian young guy, huge serve, just a super strong kid. Give a shout out to Baghdad, is playing his last tournament, playing against lucky loser Braden Schnur in the first round. But I think we're looking at a Joker, Raonic, Nadal, Federer, Final Four. I have Joker taking out Raonic, I have Federer taking out Nadal, and I have Federer winning this tournament. How about yourself?
Very good, Nima. I definitely have Djokovic going through in the top, although I think there are some potential landmines, and you know, this is the type of event where Auger Aliassime, although I feel like it's about a year or two too early,
yes,
can upend one of these big ones in a Grand Slam, but I don't think it's going to be this one. And then, of course, Tsitsipas poses a big problem, and you spoke about him. He has all the makeup to be a top player, and I think he will. I just think he needs the experience of playing these guys on the big stage over and over and over again, and he needs the fitness to back it up. And, you know, so much depends on how his early rounds go and how much energy he wastes and things like that and how he's peaking in his training. And it gets a little bit more complicated as you get up there because the margins are so small. So I think Tsitsipas is still in the process of figuring that out. And although I'd like to pick him to, you know, make the second semifinal, I can't because he's on the other side. So it's going to be Djokovic for me. I'm actually going to go with Wawrinka. I don't know why. I don't think he can move that well, but I don't know. Call it intuition. I really believe your Raonic pick is a very, very good pick. There's also a Feliciano Lopez there who kind of played lights out, although the surface is different.
In Queen's Club.
In Queen's Club versus Wimbledon. So I think that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to go with Stan in that section. And in the Nadal section, you know, I have trouble going with Nadal here. I don't think he's going to go very far. My two real picks here are between Fognini and Cilic. And although Cilic hasn't been playing well, I feel like this is where he's really comfortable. And I think he ends up making the semifinal here. And in the bottom half, you know, I've got Mr. Fed. I mean, not only is Federer the guy here, but I think he's got the draw that's going to get him to the section. And so I've got Federer, Cilic in one section, Djokovic, Wawrinka. I've got Djokovic advancing to the final and Federer advancing to the final. And I'm going to go with Fed in an epic. I'm going to go something like crazy, like Nima. It's going to be like a 7-6, 6-7. 7-5, 6-7, and then maybe like a 6-4 in the fifth. Roger okay. Federer.
So, I mean, I think it's gonna be really, really interesting. I mean, look, man, if Federer can win this tournament again somehow, you just gotta really tip your hat to the guy because he just keeps coming back for more and more. He keeps exuding this professionalism and love for the game that is very admirable even for him, which is incredible. I mean, the guy, you know, I remember Darren Cahill a couple days ago, he said something really cool. He said that if you just sold tickets to Federer's practice sessions, they would probably be sold out. I mean, it's just like the guy is just a next level.
True. I mean, who, you want to watch, I mean, don't you want to watch how a guy like that trains or just what he does, like what makes this guy, everyone's trying to get a piece of him to see what makes him tick, what makes him the best, you know? Yes. And he is the best. So
yeah, he really, really is of all. Yeah. For now, he's the best of all time. So parts is going to be very interesting. Looking forward to this all kicking off Monday morning with Djokovic leading the way as a defending men's champion, always plays the first match on center court. Okay. So Parsa, moving gears now quickly to the U.S. Open, your battlegrounds, very close to where you live in NYC, beautiful location there. Very interesting thing on news from the USTA, where they are deciding now that for this year, which is very outgoing, I would say, even for them, and I think maybe on the heels of last year with Patrick Mouratoglou, you know, kind of urging Serena to get into the net, and then there was that big fiasco with Osaka, and then all of that controversy, that they're going to allow coaching from the stands this year. Now, I'm going to go on record as saying I think it's a fantastic idea. I know there's the purists, and tennis is a thinking person's game, and, you know, players have to figure it out. But I come back with the same argument. Is LeBron James, is Sidney Crosby, is Ronaldo, Messi, are these guys not thinkers? Are these guys not elite athletes that they can't think for themselves? They all get coaching consistently throughout the game. How is tennis any different? I think coaching is coaching. They're going to do it illegally anyways. Now that the fact that you're saying that it's legal, I think is not a big deal, in my opinion. I know Federer had said in an interview last couple of years, if you have on-court coaching, not everybody can afford a coach like me. And he said, I have the best coaching team in the world. I don't think it's fair. That's really nice of you to say, Roger. But at the end of the day, man, if somebody's uncle is going to say something to them, so be it. That's what they have at their disposal, right? Maybe that helps them beat you or win the tournament or win a point, whatever the case may be, right? Same with on the women's side. For me, I think it's a great idea because it adds more theater. And Parsley, you got to remember at the end of the day, right? This is entertainment. When you get up to a professional sports category level with millions of dollars in TV and sponsorships involved. We need fans, and we need them to embrace everything as much as possible, especially with such a niche sport as tennis. I can't tell you, man, on my street, I can't tell you how many kids are playing basketball right now, wearing Kawhi Leonard jerseys and just out there doing stuff because of the Raptors. It's just blown up completely, right? How can we get tennis to that level? I don't even think if Dennis or Felix wins Wimbledon or Andreescu wins the US Open, where you're going to see an influx in tennis the way you're going to see in basketball. Because it's just not, doesn't have the same reach, right? It doesn't have the coolness factor. It doesn't have that. And I'm, as you know, a massive tennis guy. But we have to get it to that point. And the only way you're going to get it to that point is by having this evolution in the game and really reaching out as much as possible and expanding it as much as you can. What do you think?
You know, and possibly that is a way to do it. What I don't like and about this is that, you know, individual tournaments take it upon themselves to change the rules of the game. And that's what is broken about tennis, is that we will do one thing here and then the next tournament we do something else over there, and the rules of the game continue to change. And so one of the successes of the NBA, as you brought it up, is that there's consistency amongst all 30 teams making up something called the National Basketball Association. It is a league where everyone abides by the same rules and has the same opportunities, and that's how it all ends up being played out. So then you by everyone having that same opportunity, you now see who or what franchise is the champion of the world. In a case like this where it's broken up in one tournament, this is definitely favoring the person who, what about the guy who's 80 in the world who wasn't going to travel with the coach? I think it makes a difference, you know, or you know, these kinds of things where, you know, you've got, depending on the information that's coming to you, it could help, it could hurt. It does bring more theater and drama, but I just don't like the fact that the USTA has made this decision on their own, that they decide to go away from what the rest of the tennis is doing and just does their own thing. And this happens in all different kinds of levels, whether it's the number of challenges or whatever. But I think this is what is broken about tennis right now, is that it's all fragmented. Everyone sort of just decides whatever the heck they want to do, they're going to do it. And clearly, this is a publicity thing. You know, I live in New York and in the States specifically, and you know, they're definitely trying to drum up the interest and the drama and the theater by, you know, the beginning of the U.S. Open. There's going to be all this is going to be spoken about. It's going to be all about the coaching, and they're going to have the camera on the coach, and it's going to be this whole thing. And I told you to move forward. And then the players can be like, I wasn't even looking in the corner. I don't even know what you're talking about, you know, and it's just going to this whole back and forth and selfishly for the U.S. Open, I think it's going to be a good thing. But is it the right thing for the sport and the health of the sport in general, which is what you had said? You know, everyone's got the Kawhi Leonard jersey on now. And if you want to do things moving forward and you want to make changes to the game, like the challenge system was done, I feel like there needs to be a little bit more than just one individual tournament taking a leap and doing something. I think it needs to be a collective effort, a group effort by all the tennis players. Okay. Or not all the tennis players. How about just a majority of the tennis players? Okay. Voting for certain things so that we can have an idea of consistency out there, so that it's not changing from tournament to tournament. But, you know, otherwise, will it bring more theater and more drama? I think so. You know, will it bring something else to talk about? I think so. And will that in the end maybe bring more kids to the tennis court? Maybe. I don't know, but it's definitely going to be more watched, I think. Mm-hmm. But does that again offset and create an imbalance again? And are we going to always have, you know, is it going to be Federer when he's 48 still, you know, Parsa and Nima predicting that he's going to win Wimbledon still because he's now getting coaching on the side? I mean, it's crazy. So, you know, it's, we'll see, Nima. We'll see how it plays out. It's happened. It's much greater than you or I.
Yes.
It's going to happen. But forewarned for everyone out there, possibly this is creating a further fragment in our sport.
Okay. Well, hey, man, listen. Like I said, for me, I always like to see new things. You know what I mean? And obviously, if they said, listen, now tennis players can play with two tennis rackets, okay, at the same time, then that's going a little bit off tangent a little bit, but I think coaching is coaching. I've always thought that it's such an important part of the game. And yes, tennis is a thinking person sport, and you got to figure it out yourself. That's great, but you know what? Like I said, I always like these new things because technology is a big part of everything in this world, and I think evolution is a great part. And US Open definitely is looking for attention. We know
The whole idea, Nima, is that they're going to do it anyway. That's the excuse.
Yes.
So if they're going to do it anyway and you want to eliminate it, put the coach in the media box, and then the player can't see them. They still can observe and do everything they need to do, but get rid of the coach from the sideline. You know, move the box.
You know what? That honestly is a fantastic suggestion. Because no, I'm for the coaching. But what I'm saying is if the issue is to eliminate coaching altogether, you got to move the coach. Because at the end of the day, what does the coach need to do? They need to watch the match. So as they're watching the match, The whole premise is that you should not be aiding your player in any way, right? And if that is the case, then you shouldn't even be in eyesight. You don't need to be in eyesight.
Exactly.
If you need to be in eyesight, like the NBA, the NHL, you know, professional baseball, professional football, professional soccer, whatever it is, men's, women's, the coach is definitely very present, always engaging the players, always speaking to them. But if you don't want that to be the case, then there should be no coach visible. They should be up in the stands watching. That's all they need to do. And they probably will even have a better view if they're a little bit higher up, because they can look at the entire court as a complete entity and look at the point construction and how the player is moving and all of that stuff, right? So so I think that is, you know, something that we'll definitely look forward to as we move on. But with that said, thank you everybody out there for listening. Parsa, thanks again for everything for today.
Thank you, man. It's a great podcast, and I look forward to hearing some feedback on our clear audio.
Perfect. Everybody out there, thanks again for listening. Make sure to download this podcast on iTunes as well as Android. Follow all our coverage on Tennis Connected, and we will chat with you guys very soon.